Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
So, you know, it really had been a long time since a panel had talked about recommendations for allogeneic stem cell transplant. And CAR-T is a new therapy that has only been around and approved for CLL for a short period of time.
Today, Drs. Danilov and Coombs joined the podcast to discuss updated 2025 recommendations, allo-HCT, and CAR-T cell therapy in CLL Part 1 in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Alexey Danilov, a professor in the Department of Hematology and Hematopoietic Stem Cell Transplant at City of Hope in Duarte, California.
And I'm Dr. Callie Coombs, an associate professor in the Division of Hematology and Oncology at the University of California, Irvine.
Thank you for joining me, Callie.
It's my pleasure to be here, Alexey.
Over the past decade, treatment for CLL has changed dramatically. Chemoimmunotherapy has been replaced by targeted drugs such as BTK and BCL2 inhibitors, and now even new options such as non-covalent BTK inhibitors have emerged, and CAR-T cell therapy. These advances have improved outcomes, but patients with relapsed refractory disease still face big treatment challenges. As a result, the earlier 2016 transplant guidelines became outdated. Now, you were part of the panel that recently published updated recommendations on the role of allogeneic stem cell transplant and CAR-T cell therapy in patients with CLL. Let's discuss some of these updates.
Sounds great. So, you know, it really had been a long time since a panel had talked about recommendations for allogeneic stem cell transplant. And CAR-T is a new therapy that has only been around and approved for CLL for a short period of time. So a diverse group of physicians, including not only doctors that see a lot of CLL, such as myself, but also transplanters, were convened to talk about different recommendations in the setting of CLL. And so the first group of patients that I'd like to talk about are patients with responsive disease. And so the group did not recommend doing allo transplant or CAR-T in the setting of frontline consolidation or in the setting of second-line therapy in patients who are having an objective response, whether that's a CR or a PR, to either covalent BTK inhibitor or BCL2 inhibitor. So after third line, patients with CLL relapse after both a covalent BTK inhibitor and a BCL2 inhibitor who are responding to a non-covalent BTK inhibitor, the panel did recommend CAR-T cell therapy. I think recommend is a loose term here. And so the way that I would interpret this is something that could be considered for the right patient. And so I'd love to get your thoughts, Alexey, first on this specific situation, third line or beyond, and responding to pirtobrutinib, with that being the only FDA-approved non-covalent BTK inhibitor at this time.
Yeah, so this, I agree with you, Kylie. So a recommendation versus a consideration, those are two slightly different things. And it is important to consider CAR-T cell therapy in patients who became double refractory to covalent BTK inhibitor and BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax. However, you know, for example, patients who have been exposed to covalent BTK inhibitor but maybe have stopped for adverse events, poor tolerance, some other issues, but truly have not become refractory, they actually, one would anticipate that they actually might respond to pirtobrutinib for a number of years, and we have some of that data from Bruin's study. So I think we still need to make a distinction who those patients are, but truly the patients who have relapsed, who have become double refractory, for these patients, I do think we need to consider this therapy. And then the question becomes, at what exact point would you introduce CAR-T cell therapy in patients who are responding to pirtobrutinib? Now, of course, we are in a setting particularly in tertiary care institutions, where we have some amazing clinical trials with agents that we know actually work in patients who progress even on pirtobrutinib, such as BTK degraders. There are bispecific antibodies such as epcoritamab that are being studied and demonstrate pretty high efficacy and very manageable safety. So I think it really depends on the setting of where you are, what other tools might be available to you, say if patients do become so-called, I guess, triple refractory to covalent, non-covalent BTK inhibitor and BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax, whether you will offer CAR T cells early while patients are still in response to pirtobrutinib. So we know that pirtobrutinib rarely induces complete responses in these patients. So there will be residual disease even in patients who achieve deep partial remission. So there will be for CAR T cells to something there will be something for CAR T cells to work on. And therefore, there may not be necessarily a bad moment to consider this therapy. But it also is a discussion with the patient and their life plans, their goals of therapy, which will determine when exactly to do that.
I think if you ask 10 different CLL docs this question, you'll probably get 10 different answers. I think my own takeaway for this specific recommendation is it totally depends on the patient, not only their goals of therapy, but also their, you know, bigger term goals and desires. And so I think shared decision making is so important. I think the real benefit of CAR T, even in a patient responding to pirtobrutinib, is it offers kind of, as they call it, a one and done therapy. And it can lead to these long responses, which we haven't seen with a lot of our other novel agents. The responses are generally short-lived, even to pirtobrutinib, which is, you know, an amazing drug in a lot of ways, but it has a finite period of time that it works. However, I think one and done is misleading. So yes, you do get the CAR T once, but there can be long-term complications. So I think the decision on whether to use pirtobrutinib in this setting also should weigh into consideration the patient's acceptance of risk, because there can be long-term cytopenias, hypogammaglobulinemia, infections, in addition to the short-term toxicities of cytokine release syndrome and neurologic events. So it's complex, but I do think it's a reasonable consideration for that patient who is kind of up for that chance of a long response. I think the overall response is a little disappointing, where about 1 in 5 patients is going to get a complete remission, but those can be really amazing for the patients that achieve that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Kylie. And this can be therapy which induces long-term remissions. But like you said, complete response rate so far in the study, in TRANSCEND-004 study, has been 20% or so. Having said that, those are very heavily pretreated patients, most of which, if not all, had received multiple lines of chemoimmunotherapy. So it is a bit of a different setting, potentially, compared to patients that we see now, who some of whom have never seen chemoimmunotherapy anymore, at least no chemotherapy such as fludarabine and bendamustine. So I actually would be really curious to see how CAR T cells such as liso-cel perform in the real world setting when we start treating patients who had not been exposed to many lines of prior chemotherapy. And, you know, I would hedge my bets and say that it is possible that in a real world setting, when you treat patients in earlier lines of therapy, say after BTK inhibitors, BCL2 inhibitors, I would be optimistic that we might actually see some with better responses. You know, there are many factors which impact CAR T cell therapy, including the patient's own immune system, the quality, so to speak, of their T cells. There are many T cell factors which may negatively impact CAR T cell production, such as exhausted T cells, predominance of Tregs, skewage of T cells towards the immunosuppressive phenotype, and many other factors. So if we do this in earlier lines of therapy with a more preserved immune system in patients with CLL, it is possible that we'll see better results. And then there's also an issue of tumor microenvironment with nurse-like cells, myeloid-derived suppressor cells, which expand as we treat these patients more and more with several rounds of therapy. So I do think the future actually might be brighter for CAR T cells because of this particular factor. And I have treated patients with CAR T who actually did have remissions for a number number of years, and that's always very gratifying. And you're right, it's never truly one and done. Many patients do have long-term sequelae, just like you mentioned, but remissions can be very durable in patients who achieve complete response to CAR-T.
That's such a great summary. And then one final point that I'd like to make is when we're thinking about using CAR-T in the responding patient, I actually think that is another situation where we may see real-world data that looks better than the trial, because what we know as far as predictors of response to CAR-T is that one predictor of response is not only using CAR-T in earlier lines of therapy, but also the absence of bulky disease. And so when we take this example patient who's progressed on a covalent BTK inhibitor, is refractory to venetoclax, but has responding disease on Pirto, Pirto can be very good at shrinking lymph nodes. When we look at the Bruin waterfall plot, almost everyone has a reduction in lymph node burden. So if you bring in the CAR-T at time of a kind of a debulk patient, I think that may end up looking, you know, a bit more promising. Of course, we have to see what those data look like, but I am aware of different investigators working on these real-world series, and I think that'll really inform our expected success with this agent, kind of in a modern patient cohort who hasn't received so many prior lines of chemotherapy in their past.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And Kylie, the data has been presented, right? Like you mentioned, with BTK inhibitor combination, ibrutinib with CAR-T, which promises at least potentially somewhat better responses. Of course, it's very difficult to compare these patient cohorts because they are very different. But what's also interesting in that study, which combined ibrutinib and CAR-T, all these patients were already refractory to ibrutinib in the first place. So there could be some impact on the immune system with BTK inhibitors, which can be very beneficial towards CAR-T responses.
Thank you, Alexei, for that discussion. And thanks to the audience for listening to this conversation about using CAR-T in the setting of responding disease. Please tune in to the next episode where we'll talk about CAR-T and allo transplant and some other scenarios such as non-responding disease and Richter's transformation.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like this, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review in your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Daniloff and Coombs. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.